Welcome to the Clutch Burners Podcast, your home for stick shift drag racing, stick shift tech, beautiful stick car drivers, and some famous people, some award-winning people, and some handsome people. On my right or left, I don't know, or if you're just listening, we got Bankship Billy. Who else we got with us tonight?
Well, we've got the fabulous Travis Foster, who just got his race car back from the Fab Shop.
And, well, I guess we introduced everybody. You guys know who I am.
Well, no, we didn't introduce Canuck Chuck, the Canadian Chuck Norris, Rich Guido. Woo!
The man who needs no introduction, if PRI is any indication.
That is a fact.
Yeah, so yeah. Why don't we give people an overview right off the bat? What are we going to talk about tonight? So they can either hang up or, you know, hit end, or they can decide that they want to listen to this craziness again. We're going to talk about the PRI show.
Yep. PRI show that Rich Guido won a Dragon Drive Award, I don't know, Iron Man of the Year or something. You can expound upon that. That was pretty cool.
And then I can't say the award that Bill won because he won more than one. So we'll talk about that. And we'll give our bit of a PRI experience. And then I think we're going to dive into a little bit about our winter upgrades that we're going to kick each other's ass with in the spring. And then Travis is going to tell us about his car too, because we haven't heard much about Travis's car. So I think people will be excited to hear about goals for the car and what it is, touch base on that stuff, and then anything else we might dive into.
Yeah, so
we'll stumble upon.
Yeah, right. So, Rich, what exactly was the award that you got?
So this was the first Drag and Drive Awards. Michael Marks and team put this all together, and one of the awards was called the Ambassador Award, and it was awarded to three of us. And you know what? I should have wrote down what the other two fellas' names
were.
So
you were a total ass. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it was definitely. It wasn't the Assume Award. It was the Ambassador Award.
I just, my computer must be picking up the sound. Sorry.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. There was, there's a good group of friends that that showed up for the awards, and it was cool. It was cool to see. I think they did a good job.
Yeah, you brought half of Canada.
You have to bring an entourage. There was nine of us staying in an Airbnb, and really they were only there to clap while I got the award because somebody had to.
Oh, shoot. Let me just paint the picture for those of you that weren't at PRI. Rich just walks in with his whole posse, all guys in racing of their own right or whatever, including his brother, Bob. And Bob had a story all weekend where he walks up to a group of people and somebody walks up and he was like, "Oh, hey, how's it going?" He was like, "Oh, actually, I was looking for your brother."
Yeah, are you Rich Guido's brother? That's what I heard all weekend.
Yeah, that's Rich Guido's brother. So,
and if I can add, Bob Guido has won the, what is that award at Drag Week?
Spirit of the Event.
Spirit of the
Award. Yeah. It's not like he's not accomplished. He won the Spirit of Drag Week Award once and crashed into two walls.
Yeah, that was his claim to fame. I bug him that Brandon from Hot Rod, he put out an article the very first day while I was in the tech line. And so I was pretty humbled that Hot Rod already wrote an article in the magazine. But my brother quickly made that disappear when he hit both walls. And we spent the rest of the time getting his car fixed so we could actually make it all the way back home because we didn't trailer.
Yes, that's true. With junkyard wheels from a Lincoln and stuff, I remember that fondly. That was the year I met you. In fact,
that was our first drag and drive experience. We got the full experience. So why don't we start with So Bill, this is the first time that you've been to PRI where you had a booth, and let's talk about that and how well it went. And I mean, I didn't back you up much, so I wasn't there to see a whole lot of it. But I did wear your shirt on the third day. But no, tell us about what you thought about that. You know, the whole process of getting a booth, and then how did it go? How did it go with the amount of people that were there?
Yeah, so I made the decision early in the year, and I talked to Travis about this because, you know, he does the website and helps with the social media piece of the Bank Shift Billy. And so decided to get a booth and quickly realized that it's quite a process, and it's not an inexpensive endeavor. Like, initially there's the booth cost, and then it's like, oh, you'd like something other than concrete on the bottom of the booth? So carpet and a trash can and a table, that costs extra. Oh, you might need electricity for something. Well, that costs extra. Just every bit and piece of it. Oh, and then you have to have insurance for the booth. So of course that costs extra. And, but just decided to do it. And then I worked with, early in the year, I got in touch with Jeff Oppenheim with First Try Engineering. And he built a new display for the clutch controller, which is, it's amazing. Like, it turned out so nice. And then partway through the year, I came up with the idea for the Billy button, which is a solution to a lot of race cars, and we came to find out a whole lot of other people in racing, jet boats, everything else. I mean, off-road, it was crazy, the people coming through the booth. But the buttons that you have on the steering wheel, there's that coiled cable. And if it's not just a drag car, that cable gets wrapped around the steering wheel. We heard so many horror stories of guys turning off the track. The cable turns the key off, which locks the column, and now the column is locked and the car's still moving, and they're trying to get in there and turn the key back on. And it was just crazy. But the wireless buttons was a big hit. And we can go into the story of what it took to get there, because that was, it was a little unnerving, for sure. But so we had the digital clutch controller, the Bank Shift Billy, and then we had the wireless buttons, the Billy button, and traffic was unreal. I mean, we wasn't sure what to expect, but we had lots and lots. I mean, 3, 4, 5 people deep. But Travis, you helped run the booth. That seems pretty accurate. Like, yeah, a good part of the 3 days, it was just packed at the booth. And it was a really good test bed for the Billy button, because that thing literally had thousands of cycles on it. And people would walk 30, 40 feet from the booth to see how far it would reach, because they kept asking, and it was still working 30 feet away, which, if you're driving a 30-foot race car, it'll work. So, yeah. I mean, that would be like a drag school bus maybe, but you're sitting on the back bumper.
To paint the picture a little bit more, we had two displays. One was for the Bank Shift Billy that Jeff built, and the other one was for the Billy button that Jeff also built. I mean, we'll get into how tight it was to create the display for the Billy button. But huge shout out to Jeff, first of all, because each of those products had thousands and thousands of cycles on them. I mean, yes, we probably demoed both products to a couple hundred people a piece, and they worked flawlessly. So, Jeff, huge shout out to him. And they were really cool displays. I mean, this was the first year that we had experience with a booth. So, we weren't sure, you know, what would grab people's attention to bring them to the booth or anything like that. And I think the nature of both displays kind of caught people's attention and brought them in. So
I actually add, so not only did Jeff build those two displays, but he also built the two static displays for the new product showcase. So he built 4 displays.
Yeah.
And those were amazing as well. I don't even know what to say. It was just like, I hired the right dude. I can tell you that for sure.
And a lot of people, so the new product showcase, if you've never been to PRI, it was probably, what would you guys say, 10 displays down that hallway, something like 10 to 12 displays?
I think it was, I would say 15 to 20.
Okay.
Like it was, and there was a lot. And they're like, you know, two or three sided glass displays going down full of products. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. There's hundreds of new products.
And it's kind of like the cool place that you can, a lot of people start there because they can see like what's new at PRI that year. So that it kind of helps them plan their route or whatever. And I was shocked at the amount of people that came up and said, hey, we saw your product in the product showcase and we wanted like a demo of it. And so I think that goes to show that Jeff did a great job with the displays, caught people's attention and sent them straight to the booth. So that worked extremely well, I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
It also shows the value of good artwork too, because you know the stickers disappeared really quick, which is pretty interesting. the sticker collection crowd. So you got it's kind of a double-edged sword, you know. Do you have a really cool sticker and people and it draws people in? It also draws in the sticker crowd, but kind of interesting.
I
think we went through 750 stickers easy. I mean, they were just gone. I was like, oh my God, we need to parse these out for tomorrow. Like this huge stack was gone day one. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I discovered several different things about how people treat stickers in the drag racing community. I'm on one end where it's like, you know, for as long as I've been buying car parts, I get the stickers in and I really mostly just throw them away. But recently, ever since I had my son, I just started putting them in a box. So whenever he's old enough to start sticking stickers everywhere, he'll have a pile of race car stickers that he can do whatever he wants with. But then you have the crowd that has been putting them on their toolbox and their lifts and stuff like that for years. And so they're coded that way, which is pretty cool. But then discovering this crowd who probably doesn't listen to the podcast, so I'm not worried about offending them, but what's with the people who are walking around just collecting stickers? Like the people come up and they're like, ooh, I like they'll take a Billy button and a Bankshift Billy sticker, both of them. And they'll be like, wow. And sometimes they'll grab like a handful of them and stick them in their bag.
It's not like one each. It's like a stack. And by the time you see it, you can't be like, dude, just one. They're like, flipping like a deck of cards and they walk off. They're like, oh my God.
So I don't understand the crowd.
Kevin just slips in there, grabs one and goes. It was like,
I don't understand the crossover of people who are really interested in the sticker, but not at all interested in the product. It was a very bizarre thing to watch, but there was a lot of that. I mean, the people that came up and grabbed stickers and then they were like, you know, tell me about the product or whatever, I understand. But the people that were like, nah, I don't really like racing, I just like stickers. Okay.
But you're at the performance racing industry trade show, right?
Yeah, very interesting.
It was also interesting. Even while I was there for only a few hours, the amount of listeners.
A few hours. It's up to a few hours now, Travis.
I was there for a couple hours ish. Anyways, it was cool to have a bunch of listeners come up. And even while I was walking around with my Clutch Burner shirt on, there was lots of people, lots of listeners out there. So appreciate everyone who does enjoy these and spends the time listening to them.
Yeah, we did have a few very zealous fans come up, and that was just so flattering. It was really cool. But a lot of people just really thankful for the content and the guests that we've been able to have on here. I mean, honestly, they're selfish for Rich and I. Like, oh, we need to learn more about this. Let's get this guy on.
Yeah,
but totally. Apparently other people like it too, which is, it's pretty neat to hear that, you know, at something like that. So
yeah absolutely. Yeah,
thank you.
Because most of the time it's like, okay, we look at the guest list and it's like, who could we learn the most from, you know? And then we go through and we pick somebody and then so it's so interesting to see the amount of people that come up, you know, and that are like, you know, I learned a lot. I listened to every episode or whatever. It's like, that's awesome, because so do we. You know what I mean? Like, that's really what we're interested in. So thank you, everybody who was fans of the podcast and just came up and shook hands, because and what's really interesting is, like, you know, we see the numbers for as many people that listen, but putting faces to a lot of the names that I see or a lot of the names that I don't see is really interesting. Like, those of you guys that came up and you don't like anything or comment on anything or whatever, you just are listeners, I admire you guys a lot, because you are stick shift racing fans. You know what I mean? You just want to learn about the technical side of things and just listen to stick shift drag racing. And that's what I love too. So it's nice to see that our efforts are appreciated in the same way that we appreciate them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yes. It was a pleasure. A pleasure to meet a bunch of you. For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, back to Bill and PRI.
So, things that we learned. So I do have to talk about the Billy button and what a shit show that was to get it there. So about 2 weeks before PRI, no, even more than that, 3 to 4 weeks ahead, I had been working with the electrical engineer that put together the clutch controller. And 8 months before, I had tasked him and given him the idea for the wireless buttons and all that. And, you know, like a month or so before the show, I'm like, man, I was supposed to have a prototype like a month ago. Like, where are we at? Long story short, I fired him on a Monday because I had nothing. And Tuesday morning, I hired a different electrical engineer. And he was quite a bit more expensive, but he had the whole thing turned around in 4 days, starting from scratch. And submitted everything, files and everything, to the printed circuit board prototype manufacturer. And then I had a vacation planned with my beautiful fiance for like 10, 11 days. And I made sure that I had all of this set up and was ready to go before I left, so that when I got back, I could pick up the prototypes, test them, make sure they got from Colorado to Pennsylvania to Jeff to put in the displays and everything else. And so I get back on a Monday night, call the manufacturer on Tuesday morning, and they're like, we don't have your order in our system. And I'm like, what? Oh my God. So this is Tuesday. The next Tuesday, I have to leave for Travis's house, which was almost exactly halfway to Indianapolis. And they admitted their mistake. They were like, we're going to make this happen. They had to, I don't know what it cost them, but they did a 48-hour turn on stuff. And then Friday afternoon, I don't know what kind of shipper they got, but they shipped the prototypes from Colorado to Jeff, and he received them Saturday afternoon, the next day. That's not cheap. But Jeff got them, and then there was this little tiny plug and harness that had to be made to go from the buttons on the steering wheel to the transmitter in the steering wheel. And I tried like heck to get those things to crimp them. Couldn't do it. I had to then buy a special Molex crimper that was like $340. And then I had to pay to have it overnighted. So I got the crimper to make the harnesses while Jeff had the things. But because he didn't have all the pieces, he couldn't hook it up yet. So I got to Travis's Tuesday night. We left. What time was it? 5:30?
Yeah.
5:30 Wednesday morning to drive 20 miles to Indianapolis. We met Jeff at, was it 2:33 on Wednesday?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the setup day. We had to be done setting up at 5. And we're putting boards in this display that he made. And nobody had ever seen it work. And we're trying to figure out how to program it. Can't do it. I call the electrical engineer. He walks us through it. And it works. We're like, holy shit, this is so cool. And then we had a failure. So on the display that he made, there's 4 buttons on the steering wheel. And there were 4 LED lights, but also 2 solenoids. So that not only do we get a light, but we also got some movement and noise from the solenoids. So you know, visual, it was kinetic, there was auditory, like that was really what we were going after. And I'm going to be honest, one of the solenoids failed right away. So we're like, oh crap. Oh, it's okay. We got another board. So we had four boards. One of the boards went in the static display. So we had four boards. We put the other one in. I couldn't remember how to program it, even though we'd just done it. Called the engineer back, and thank goodness Travis pulls out his phone and he's recording me programming it as I'm talking to him.
Like, we have to remember this because we're going to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got it working again. We had some problems and we had some failures in the boards, but that was excellent testing. And
yeah,
we're currently in a complete redesign process to shrink everything by at least half or not more in size. It's going to be even better than what anybody saw at the show. But literally thousands of cycles, like we would talk to people about it and then we take the steering wheel off and hand it to them and tell them to hit one of the buttons and the thing would go kum, 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 and they would be like, Oh, and
so and super, let me tell that. So this display, the Billy button, had a detachable, steering wheel with four buttons on it. And first of all, you talked about all those cycles, and people are like, you know, how durable or how reliable is it? It's like, well, at this show, this has had more trans brake launches than any race car would see in its whole lifetime.
Probably so.
But yeah, so we got a bunch of I mean, the first day started, and whenever we handed the steering wheel to people, like Bill said, people were like, oh, and like once that display that Jeff built, like kept going ta-dunk, 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 and had that kind of like audible and that feel to it, people were like, oh, that's awesome. And we got so many good reactions. You know, Bill and I were like, I think we should set the camera up and start recording some of these reactions.
Yeah.
And then maybe at the end of the show, we like string all those together. And it's like, these are the reactions to the Billy button. And I mean, we had 100, like good ones,
hours,
you know,
hours of footage.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is going to be awesome, you know, but, on the last day, I think we were packing stuff up and we were like, I think I noticed, I'm like, where the heck's the camera? So yeah, somebody stole our camera at PRI. So that footage is gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought about that. Maybe I should call around to the pawn shops in the area and just see, because all the accessories for the camera, you know, the camera's useless without all the accessories and the battery charger and everything else.
I just want that SD card back.
So we have that footage. I would buy the ISD card and they can keep the camera that isn't going to work for them without all pieces. But yeah, super big bummer. So we'll figure out something else. But
we talk about the good, exciting stuff that happened too. So
I'm not gonna let that wreck the show at all.
And you you won some awards. Tell us about the awards you won.
Yeah, so, and maybe Travis can post some pictures of them, but so flattered. So the clutch controller won one of the top three best new products in the drivetrain division. And that was super cool. And then it also won a Judge's Choice Award from
Chad Reynolds
from Bang Shift.
Yeah.
And that was super cool too. Just really, honestly, it was surreal. Like Travis called me, I think a day or two after we got back, and he was like, dude, I'm not sure how you're feeling, but it was a total blur. And I'm like, yeah, it was completely surreal. Like it was just, it was nuts. Like it was so awesome.
Yeah. It felt like a couple hour ordeal. You know what I mean? And it took us all week.
yeah, for sure. So yeah, it was great. And we definitely going back next year, might do a double booth so we can set up a traffic pattern through it, because it was 3, 4, 5 people deep most of the show. And I feel like more people could see it and experience how it works and ask questions when they weren't so stacked up at the booth. So
yeah,
it was pretty neat.
And we got some feedback. It's like, I thought we were like comfortably busy pretty much the whole time, like consistently busy. I remember there was one day where like we didn't get lunch till like 2 or 3 o'clock or something like that. That was the busiest day. And we're just like inhaling these things.
Yeah.
But people did say multiple times that they came by and they were like, oh, we saw the booth was busy, so we just like kept on walking. And then they were like, so we just came back later. And it's like, okay, there's probably a ton of that, you know, that people, you know, so thinking about that, maybe we could find like a third person that could help out in the booth. Like, I'm just like trying to brainstorm. No, so we keep razzing Rich about this, but in reality, Rich was going around kissing babies and signing autographs and stuff like that, you know, because it's like, you know,
it's a full time job being famous.
Well, it was pretty. So I don't know what this my fourth time being at PRI, but it is amazing how many people like that from the Drag and Drive world or just from the car world that know us from Drag and Drive or this podcast. And yeah, it was super humbling. Like day one, you know, I was thinking I'm going to make some tracks and get through because usually Thursday is quieter. It was not quieter in my opinion this time. Thursday almost seemed like the busiest day, but I bet you I stood in one spot and wandered around a couple of places and I didn't have any time to go see anything on Thursday and Friday, Saturday. It was a blur for me as well, but it was pretty humbling. I think, you know, one thing we should highlight is the amount of Drag and Drives now compared to when we did our first one in 2013. I mean, there was one and there was probably 250 people that did it. They're predicting, you know, in 2024 that there's probably going to be 40 events and like 5,000 people competing. And I think the crossover there is pretty exciting for, you know, even people like yourself who are making automotive products. But I have a few friends that were in the machinery row and he said he was at SEMA and it was like, eh, you know, obviously SEMA and machinery row probably don't go together that well, but he was saying day one when his booth opened, there was somebody sitting down there and he sold a machine. That guy left and he sells crankshaft balancing machines. When that guy left, he sold another machine. He said it was a fantastic show for him and he couldn't believe, like, they were talking 50,000 people were going to go through there in 3 days. So it's pretty cool to see our hobby continuing to grow like it is for various reasons. Drag and Drive is just one of them, but super cool to see how it's exploding. It feels like it's getting its second wind.
Oh, I can't agree more. Like, I know that Michael Marks posted that sheet that has shown the attendance and the number of events, and it's freaking, I mean, I don't even think it's a hockey stick. It's like a straight line. It's like my boost curve, Rich. It's straight up.
You're going to need it, Phil.
Well, we'll get to that. But I will say, interestingly enough, like your friend, so we decided at the show to do this, but Travis and I, we decided to do 40 spots, pre-order spots for the Billy Button at a discounted rate from where it's going to retail at. And we had a number of people do that at the show, sign up for those and pay for them and everything. And, you know, it's on the website, but, and this might be a shameless little plug for it, but yeah, we're, you know, doing the pre-order for those to get those going and planning to deliver in 2024, even though it's going through a complete redesign right now. We're going to hit that goal. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. PRI, there's a few guys who are with us. That was their first experience and stuff. So, you know, I've heard different reviews of it. I didn't make it through all the booths either, but it was pretty cool. I managed to stop and chat with a few of the people that support me, and Crower was there, Lewis was there. I know he brought you some parts there too, Bill. And
yep, I got my lifters.
So there was
so let's talk about what you picked up, because you didn't go home empty-handed, that's for sure, Rich. You went shopping.
Pockets aren't empty, Rich.
Well, I think the only thing I came home with was some injectors. For
fuel injectors? Don't you already have fuel injectors?
Yeah, but you know, you need bigger ones if your boost curve looks, you know, like straight up. But,
but So let's talk about it. You're being a little evasive here, but tell people what you're doing. It's pretty, it's actually pretty cool. It's going to be pretty cool. I'm anxious to see how it works.
Yeah. So, you know, any of the listeners know that my car is heavier than any race car should be. And it's, you know, it ranges anywhere from 4,030 to 4,100 pounds, depending on how much water is in the water tank. So, you know, the reality is 850 is my goal. I still want to be able to drive it everywhere, but I want to be able to run 850s pretty consistently, because between Bill and Chris Hine and Brent Stevens and all my buddies, traveling everywhere with Chris Hine is no fun when he kicks your butt at every track and he's got to slow his car down. So, you know, as much as I do this because I love to drag race, it, you know, it's still fun to be competitive. So I decided I was going to make a few changes. The first and most expensive one is the car came with manual steering and manual brakes. So I took all that stuff off and weighed the factory box that I put back on the car, and it was 41 pounds. So that was an easy choice. I think I'm going to find out really quick. The first time I backed my car out of the garage, I got a really sharp turn. So I might be cursing the power, no power steering right off the bat.
Yeah, so let me give a little detail, because you kind of glazed over it there. You had a full Hydro Boost setup. Power steering pump provides power steering and power brakes. There's a lot of equipment there.
Yeah, so the power steering box itself is heavier. The pump is heavy. And then the Hydro Boost and all associated lines is also heavy. I will say I love power steering and the way the Hydro Boost worked. So I took it all off. I didn't drain the fluid. I didn't do anything. I just took it all off and set it to the side. And if I hate it, I can go back real easy. I didn't. There was no changes there. And then I don't think I'm going to have time to do it before sick week. This is probably the bigger change. Well, actually, there's one other change that's going to happen before sick week. And that is I dry decked the block and the heads. And so there's no more coolant flowing through the deck surface. And so if you lift the head gasket, you're not going to put water on your tires. But the other thing it allows you to do is, oh yeah. And I may have O-ringed it, and we'll put a copper gasket in. And so, you know, I've only ran like 15, 16 pounds of boost. The dyno number was at 17 pounds, and that was 1485. And so we're going to turn it up a little bit, 20.
To the tire, 1480 horse to the tires at 17 pounds. That's nuts.
So probably crank her up at least 3 PSI, maybe 4 PSI. And my motor seems like it's about one PSI is about 50 horsepower. So I'm hoping between losing a little weight and O-ringing and adding a little boost, and I'm going to try to remove a little bit more weight and go to methanol, which will remove, I weighed it all already. It's about 96 pounds, which is quite a bit already. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that piece of it before sick week, but that'll be post sick week. But the goal going to sick week is, as long as I go quicker than 870, like 855 would be perfect. And then Bill doesn't have any events, so he'll lose a little bit more hair while he's trying to catch up.
Wait, so you mentioned what, 41 pounds plus 96 pounds? Is that all the weight that you've lost this winter? Less than about 150 pounds, 140?
Yeah, yes. I think so. We'll see.
That doesn't seem very convincing, Travis, does it?
It sure doesn't.
I think there's more, Rich. Are you going to tell, or are we just going to be surprised?
We're just going to have to find out the hard way, like usual.
Out the hard way. We got 99% of our secrets on here anyways, so you got to keep 1%. What about you, okay, Bill? What's going on with you? Do you you got a block again? Because I think you tried to blow the last one up trying to keep up to me. So,
Well, it cracked on the road in the middle of the night in front of a pretty sketchy drunk farmer's house. So I did order another Dart block. Mine was a Gen 1, and the Gen 2 is a little bit different. I did run over to the Dart booth at PRI and talk to them, and they made some, I would say, significant changes to the block. It is set up for a 6-bolt head, which I don't have, but that gives me the option. and they changed the oiling system completely. The restrictors and everything are now in the middle of the valley, so the oiling system goes up and then branches out from the middle instead of starting at the front or the back and oiling all the way down. So if you have a little bit of an oil control issue before, it was pretty guaranteed you were going to wipe out the last rod bearing or pair of rod bearings in the system. And this way, it's now half as long. I don't really think I have oil issues. But there's that. The block does seem a little bit stouter, which is nice because it's rated for more power than the old one was. That's good.
Because then if you
just... Why would you need more power?
Yeah.
Why would you need to hold more power, Bill?
The longevity will be way better now if you just stay about the same, but maybe back it down a little. Then you won't be, rebuilding it all the time.
Well, I think you're right. I'll be able to back it down, but since I got my shocks back from Menser, and now they can handle the massive separation that I was having, I should be able to launch with double the boost I was before, and it'll increase the short track, and I won't have to do anything else. So you're right. It'll probably go 849.
So to interject really quick, one thing that I think is people don't realize is, I hate to say this, but it's like how much more is left in your guys' cars, because it's like, Rich, I don't remember what your tune is exactly, but Bill, you left on like 1 pound when you ran your like 870 something, didn't you?
Yeah, it was less than 2 PSI. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like your cars are not running on the ragged edge, and that's why they last events. Is because you guys have good stuff in your cars and you maintain them. And I think a lot of people don't realize that you're just using good parts and they're working for you.
Go
ahead, Bill.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is something that's taken a lot of years to kind of refine. For both Rich and I, we're really trying to maximize what we already have. And cracking a block it was a hairline crack and it lost a cam bearing. Like literally, I'm pretty sure this block could be repaired and I wouldn't probably put 1,000 horsepower through it, but you could make a pretty 500-600 horsepower NA motor out of it. And I think it'd be super happy. But yeah, it's just a matter of really working to fine tune what you have, because it's so easy to make power. But especially in a stick shift setup, if you can't get that to the ground early in the run, like 60 foot, 330, you can make 2,500 horse and back half, 200 miles an hour. Yeah, it'll be faster, but you don't have to push it that hard if you can get the short track and the launch and all that figured out. And that's really what we've been working on. I mean, our cars are heavy. I would argue they're not overpowered. A lot of people would say, yes, they are. But we have to work a little harder because they're heavy. Like if it's light, it's just easier.
Yeah. Chris Hine is a good example. He listens to this and he would tell you that, he's learned a lot from us, but man, being 2,900 pounds, I think is what he was weighing at Death Week. Yeah, it's a lot more forgiving. It's a lot easier to make that thing go fast. But still, as a stick shift, it's still a fun challenge. It doesn't matter what the weight is.
For sure.
We just have a bigger challenge, that's all. But, I think having a heater, having a bunch of that stuff that allows me...
Comfortable seats.
To comfortably drive as far as I do is what's important to me. It's not what's important to everybody, but... that's a piece of it for me. I mean, I'm going to be driving 3,000 miles to Florida again here in the middle of winter, and I want my heat and I want a comfortable seat. So there's a lot of weight I could lose out of the car if I wanted a race car, but it's not a race car. So
yeah, you're close enough to 850s that you don't have to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is the goal. And if Chris Hine puts more bars in his car, you know, there's lots. There's Jeremy Howell and
Chad Fegley.
Chad Fegley, like there's a ton of people
who's also making some winter upgrades, by the way.
Major surgery to that car. Wow.
I told him he should just stop with the whole front end off, but he didn't seem to think that was a good idea. But it's still super cool to see how many stick cars are. The whole class is just booming. Like it's just
amazing
to me.
So Bill, okay. So you got new lifters, new block, new shocks, or did you just get your shocks revalved?
No, I had them revalved. Okay. They, for whatever reason, replaced one of the tubes. I don't know why, but they're rebuilt and cleaned.
Okay.
So those are good.
What other upgrades do you have in mind?
Well, I did and I'm going to post a video about this. I did a flow analysis. I had to hire a guy because I'm not an engineer, but I hired a guy who did a SolidWorks flow analysis of my air-to-air intercooler. And I'm going to be making some changes to that to make it more efficient because the core, it's a Bell core, and the core is rated for 2,200 horsepower. But again, it's the little things. I want to make that thing operate as efficiently as possible because I'm going to make 2,200 horsepower with it.
Ow.
Oh, no response from Rich. So I'm on the fence right now.
Sit back in my car so I can give you a ride back home after.
Perfect. Perfect. So I'm really close to pulling the trigger on some new turbos as well. But I had a little surprise from the IRS here at the end of the year. So I'm not sure yet if we'll see. We'll see if I can figure a few things out, then I'll still do that. But honestly, with the little baby turbos I have, if I can launch with, you know, 8 pounds of boost, it'll get there. I think it'll do it. The bigger turbos would make it probably easier to do because they do have the potential to make more power. I think these ones are pretty close to the edge of the boost curve because they're making some heat. And they're little, like, you know, they're 62s and it's a 427 cubic inch motor. It's a pair of 62s. So they're definitely working. It's not making a ton of back pressure because I monitor that, but it's just out of turbine is really what it is. And it'll probably make a little more. I mean, I only make 20 pounds ish. And it'll probably make 24, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But that is the plan, is to put a little bit bigger turbos plural on it. But other than that, not huge changes.
So you want to go with new Garrett turbos? What size were you thinking?
God, you want all my secrets, don't you?
All of them. You can only hold 1% according to Rich Guido.
So the G40 1150 is what I'm planning to go to. So those are rated for 1150 horsepower each, which gets me even over what the core is rated for.
Nice. Okay. I'm just going to buy another 94 when it's time. So
yeah. And I guess my co-pilot's a machinist, Jamie, and we're exploring a way to make a hub for the stack of discs I already have, because I do want to switch over to the 29 spline input shaft, because even right now I'm having just issues of continually twisting input shafts. And I think the 29 spline would do it, but the clutch discs, like, you just can't get a 29 spline clutch disc. But if I can get a hub, or if we can make hubs, then I'm golden.
We'll not yet.
They are starting to make them. Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to think who's got a couple of them. Somebody's got a couple.
Well, I think I think ACT is making them because Tess and Tony, I believe they've got one. Or no, it's Nick Coleman.
Nick Coleman's
been testing one, and I think he got his discs from ACT, but I'm not positive.
Yeah. Before we got to talk more about Jamie, because you sent your shocks to be upgraded, but mine were upgraded on Miles of Mayhem, or one of them was anyway. So that one's still in the car. It's well-handled by Jamie. So,
Yes. So let's talk about upgrades. Somebody got their brand new race car in their house now. That would be Travis Foster.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us what you got. You've been sharing pictures with us, but really nobody knows. And it's super cool.
Okay. Yeah. I have an 86 Camaro. I bought it as a roller a couple years ago.
Is it an IROC?
No, it's not. I wish it was. Would that make me so much cooler if it was?
No,
I would have to start growing that out the back of my hair for sure. Yeah. I may have to anyway. I think it's just part of the course, but
the power bullet.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I thought about platform for a long time before I finally pulled the trigger on this. I originally wanted to build like a newer model GTO, like a 2006 GTO, something like that. That's what I really wanted. But I'm glad that I didn't go that route for a couple of reasons. Number one is cost. And number two is those cars are heavier than the third gen Camaros are. So and then a good deal came up on this roller from Louisiana. It used to be a small block Chevrolet nitrous combo with some automatic in it. I don't even know what it was. Who cares?
Doesn't matter.
Good answer.
Yeah. But now it's going to be totally different. It's going to be a twin turbo LS stick shift car, obviously. So the combo is first, it's going to be a stock bottom end LS. It's got a 5.3 liter in it. Twin VS turbos. They're 66 73s.
Nice.
And then T56 Magnum from G-Force that my buddies talked me into buying. So that was my Christmas present to myself last year.
I once cry once.
Yeah. I'm very excited. My goal is to get that car out by May. We'll see if that happens, but that's my goal because the new track is opening up close to here. So that my goal is to run at that track next year. Because if I don't run at it, I'm going to be at every race anyway, and hopefully to show support to those guys because I really want to reward them for pouring money into opening a track in this sport when all these tracks across the country are closing. So whatever I can do to do that and to race there in the first year, I think would just be really cool. It's Flying H Racetrack is what it's called. From what it sounds like, and I would really like to get these guys on, but what it sounds like is this guy who's got money, Scott, and I think it's his son-in-law, but I could be wrong. Is in a racing and I think they went in together on this thing to build a racetrack and that could be way off. But I really want them to get them on here to answer some of our questions because I think that'd be pretty cool. But so anyway, I'm building this car. Talking to all the people that we have in the podcast, I try to decide if I want this to be a radial or a slick car. I think I just want to put radials on it at the beginning and just go with it that way. Because that's what a lot of the stick cars are running now is radials. And I think this new track Flying H will have decent prep at it. Because a lot of the other tracks around here wouldn't hold, a radial stick car, in my opinion. I would probably have to go with slicks. But I'd really like to just travel and run like Streetcar Takeover and those types of heads up stick shift events. I'm going to be a duck at all of those races because I'm building an 8 second car, and these cars are in the sixes already, but that's okay. I had to think about this long and hard about, do I want to build a drag and drive car or a heads up stick shift car? And the harsh reality is I can't afford to be competitive in either of them. But the reason that I chose heads up stick shift racing over drag and drive is I talked to Bill at length about this, is I'm okay skimping out on a lot of parts for a heads up car that I wouldn't be okay skipping out on a drag and drive car. Because yeah. I have drag and drive experience. I mean, just my little experience. I mean, carrying spares of things is very expensive. And then carrying spares of really good parts is extremely expensive, you know? So it's like, I don't know how far away from home I would like to drive a stock bottom end LS car with, I mean, especially transmissions. I mean, this transmission I have in this car, I would prefer not to carry a spare. So
I don't carry a spare. I don't carry a spare of that.
So, I mean, and it's like valve train and things like that. It's like, if I was going to build a drag and drive car, I'd want it to model kind of your guys' philosophy where you buy good parts and you work with what you have and they last. And you know, there's a cost associated with that. And I wouldn't be competitive in that realm anyway. So I don't know. It was a very difficult decision, but right now the car is going to be, I mean, it's going to be non-intercooled. It's going to be methanol, no radiator. I mean, it's a race car. It should only hold 4 or 5 gallons of fuel. It should be relatively light. I mean, it's going to be light compared to you guys. I always like to say that the car is probably going to be 2,900 pounds and 3,800 pounds with me in it. So, that's my car. I debated, I talked to Bill a little bit about, do I want to do like a YouTube series where I like cover the build and things like that? I've gone back and forth because who cares? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what's in the back of my head is like, who really cares? Because that car hasn't done anything yet. I think once that car has done something and I have something to teach people, then I'm good to go. But so far, the Stick Shift Nation YouTube channel has guys way smarter than me teaching you how to do stuff. So that's, I wouldn't want to dilute it with my failures.
It's the failures that get views, I think. I think that's what happens.
Yeah, true.
Totally.
Nice. That's exciting, Travis.
Yeah, that's super exciting. Like, I think that's pretty cool that you've made that decision for yourself too of what you want to do and build, because you can always change it down the road. But you know, you're a young man with a new family, and you got to be pretty smart about that. Otherwise, you'll end up on the Freedom 85 like me. But speaking of heads up racing, I haven't told you this yet, Travis, but I think I was telling Bill, I think it's April 12th and 13th, Jimmy Dale, Tom Gunner has this race called Small Tire Gangster Race, and it's at Yellow Belly. And if you haven't went on the web and seen what that outlaw track looks like, the first time I saw a video of that, it might have been Big Chief going down there and doing some testing, but then Tom Gunner, aka Jimmy Dale, has made quite a name for his event down there and stuff. So I'm actually thinking I'm gonna drive all the way down there for it in April and try a little heads up racing and then hopefully drive home in one piece. That's the main goal, but it would be nice to do a few rounds down there. And that track looks like, man, it looks like you're going into a tunnel or something. Like, it is a wild looking track. So I managed to talk to him at PRI and BS with him a bit and stuff. And super cool dude and hilarious. And
his videos are so funny.
Oh my God. He's fantastic. So
I mean, for an automatic guy, he's not bad.
Yeah. So that's kind of goal, sick week for me, and then if everything goes well there before my plant turnaround in June, hopefully in April I'm going to drive back down to Texas and do that event and hopefully drive home. So you know, I think it's cool that you know, you don't just have to be a drag and drive. I'm sure I'm going to be a duck at that race too, but Tom was talking about making an overdrive class. So whatever car you're driving, it has to have an overdrive. A gear vendor or, you know, a stick car or, you know, a 4L80. So it'll probably be more heavy cars that are driven on the street. He has a street class too, but we all know that you can make just about anything a street car if you really want. So
is there a thought of a double overdrive class?
I don't think so. Not at this point. Me and you go down there and race each other. So Chris Hine.
That sounds perfect. What
we do. It's 8th mile.
Hey, my car will have double overdrive too. I'll be there.
There you go.
Yeah, it's the 8th mile stuff that you don't need the extra bars for, and that's where Mr. Hine has a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. But that's okay. We'll see what we can
do. It is.
Well, that's cool. Cross something off your bucket list.
Yeah.
So one of the things about PRI that I thought was super intriguing was just the amount of feedback about additional products and changes and upgrades to stuff, which has led to, along with the Billy Button, we're developing another one alongside of it that's a little bit different based upon a lot of the feedback that we got. And that was just super cool. And I would love any messages, feedback of people that have issues that aren't resolved. Like, you just deal with them because it's, you know, it's just a pain. But perhaps there's some solutions there that can be created to help with some of those things. Like the wireless buttons is one. But there's probably some others that I haven't thought about. Or, I mean, I would love to hear about other issues that people would like to see solutions for that, you know, maybe you can work towards figuring out.
Yep. And I'm not going to spoil anything, Bill, but we definitely brainstormed some good ones. Like, we seriously just thought about, okay, what are the most annoying pieces about our car? And is there a solution for that might be in the realm of possibility? So,
Well, one of them that we talked about, we had a lot of feedback about, was so the current Billy button has got 4 buttons. And the output from the receiver is basically, it's going to be all solid state, but just think of it as, it has like, you know, 4 30-amp outputs, so you can run heavy stuff. But a number of people were like, you know, have you thought about making one that doesn't have those, it just be low current outputs, so you could trigger an external relay board or go directly into an ECU. And so that is the other one that we're developing side by side with the Billy button, because that's not a big ask to just take the solid state piece out and then add more, you know, potentially 8 buttons. But we're working on that. Some of the other pieces I'm not going to talk about right now, but they're pretty exciting. Like, it's going to be
very exciting. Like industry changing exciting, in my opinion.
Oh, that one. Yeah. That one too.
Yeah.
And that's something I know nothing about, which from what I'm hearing might be an advantage, because it needs somebody from outside the realm of that to figure something new. But we'll see. We'll might actually have something this week. I'll find out something this week.
Yeah. And another thing is, like, you know, the current Billy button, like you said, has 4 outputs. But if you get rid of the relay board, essentially, and you just have low current outputs, you can get up to how many outputs? 8 low current?
So we're looking at 8. Yeah. And you know, keep in mind that we can go so far as to make it highly configurable via an app and change the outputs of all this stuff, but it becomes more complex. Then you have an app you got to build with it and everything else, and it just becomes more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ideally, we want to keep this thing around $650 is kind of where we're at, ish, in that area. And the more basic I can keep it, there's less reliability issues. You know, when you get stuff integrated with an app and all these settings and stuff, sometimes it becomes so confusing, like it almost pushes people away. Like me, like if it's really confusing, like I don't even want to deal with it. Like, mm-hmm. like my oven in my kitchen, I can connect to it wirelessly. I've never, ever done that because it's such a pain in the ass. I can't ever get it to work with the app. And I'm just like, screw it. I'll just,
you're not one of those guys. Nice to, you're not one of those guys sending tweets from your refrigerator.
No, no, but it would be nice maybe to preheat the oven sometime. But I'm running late, like, for the podcast. I'm always eating at the beginning of this podcast, it seems like. And if I could just preheat that oven before I got home, I might not do that. But, yeah, I mean, I want to keep it simple from a cost perspective, but also just from a user interface. And one of the things, and I want to talk about it here because I'd love to get some feedback. I did post a survey about this with some results, but two of the circuits I'm thinking of just making blinker circuits. So if you don't need those, then you still have six outputs that can go directly to the ECU for, you know, trans brake, boost, or scramble. I can't even name all the ones that people might use, but if it's a drag and drive car, you could have a left blinker, a right blinker, a horn. Let's see, that's three. You could have a trans brake. You could have a scramble button. That's five.
Purge, nitrous.
Nitrous, purge, line lock. You know, lots and lots of things. So yeah, that's some of what I'm working on. You know, it's outside of the very niche market of stick shift drag racing with a diaphragm style clutch.
What's this?
So the market's a lot bigger, and it's interesting. We had so many people, like, I was shocked by how many people came up, and you could just hear them talking, saying, this would be a great solution for our drag boat program. And I'm like, what? Like, I never thought of it for that, or off-road, or like, I don't even remember all the ones they were talking about. Do you remember some of them, Travis?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to back you up. What's this trans brake? I can brake my car without any buttons. Like, what is a trans brake?
Well, that would
I
didn't be.
I want to hit that button. If I could control it in your car and brake your trans, then that might work for me. But
yes, yes. So actually, and that's actually a good comment, because a lot of people asked about the security of the buttons. And we're using an existing chipset and technology that's already been engineered for the problems of, and I don't know the term, but when people steal, what's it called?
Crosstalk.
Well, where they like on the new cars, they can steal the thing to get in your car and then go steal your Dodge Charger or whatever.
Oh.
So it's very, very secure, like 24, like what was it, Travis?
The number like 2 to the 24th power.
Yeah, and each button has its own individual distinct address with a selection of 2 to the 24th power. It's encrypted. It checks the encryption on sending and transmitting, and I guess sending and transmitting is the same.
Yeah. But, transmitting and receiving. But
yes, there's a lot of checks going on in there. And then people asked about the speed of it, and the current Billy button is 65 milliseconds. So there is a little bit of lag there. It's really very, very difficult to discern as a human being that speed. But really, this is tailored for drag and drive type stuff. I mean, if you're a super competitive bracket racer, maybe this isn't for you, but that's okay. But I still think it could work for them as well, because they're always changing adjustments with the buttons to tailor their reaction times and everything else. But yeah.
What's interesting is a lot of people that run trans brake already don't know how laggy theirs is. So, you know, and a lot of people would say, you know, how fast is it? You know, say 65 milliseconds. Like, how fast is that? It's like, well, how fast is yours right now? You know, you know, it's like, so, I mean, how easily accessible is a lot of this information, and how do you measure your speed and things like this? But one thing's for sure is, you know, the speed has been measured on the Billy button, so you know what it is. And a lot of bracket racers, they build that in, like, to their reaction time, you know? So for a lot of bracket racers, that would work perfectly fine. But yeah, I mean, the amount of things that people came up and said that they use their buttons for, like, all sorts of different industries and sports and stuff like that. You know, we had like a bunch of boat people, which was, like you said, my biggest surprise, because I don't know anything about boating, but I guess there's a lot of stuff that they have to operate in the rear of their boat. And a lot of these guys were like, man, I've broken that wire so many times. It's like, this would be a perfect solution. Or the off-road guys, all sorts of different off-road racing came up. I mean, people from casual, like side-by-sides, all the way up to these guys who have huge teams. I remember some of them were like, I have a button to radio my crew. So I just push a button on my steering wheel and I can talk to my crew. I mean, that would work. Another one was, I have electronic tear-offs or so I push a button on my steering wheel and it rips my tear-off off. And it's like, yeah, all of the above, you know what I mean? So that's kind of where that second device really came into play was a lot of these devices are already relayed on their end. You know,
yeah.
they will already come as their complete board that's already relayed, and you just need to send a low signal to it to trigger it. A lot of people have that stuff in their car, or a lot of people already have, you know, their wiring panel in their car with a full relay panel and fuse and all that stuff. So they just need the signal wires. So,
or just to go into an ECU, yep. You don't need a relay for that.
Yep.
So yeah,
I think that really. Kind of like, I think that excited people for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And what else is interesting is like, you know, we knew that we had a ton of people that were breaking these buttons on their steering wheel, the wired buttons. And it's interesting because, you know, they show up and they have those great big thick cables on them and you're like, oh, I will never break these, you know? And so it's like, we knew that there was a failure rate and we knew that it was a problem that needed a solution, right? But I had no idea the scale. I would say
three times in a weekend. That one guy, three times in a weekend, they broke the trans brake wire.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to throw a number out there. I would say 90%, definitely over 80% of the people who came up were like, oh yeah, I've broken one, or, you know, I've had one not work or something like that. So, a huge amount of people have this issue. So it's very interesting.
Well, and if I would add, guess when they found out that it was broken?
On the starting line.
Yeah, they go to do their burnout, and I know these are automatic cars. They do their burnout, and they push the trans brake button to activate reverse, and the car won't back up because the wire broke. And now, A, they don't have reverse, and B, they don't have a trans brake now. And that's how they find out, is at the line.
Like, yeah.
It's not something they...
And it wasn't an isolated issue. Dozens of people said that.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. So this sounds a lot like an advertisement, but
yeah. But I mean, it was the most exciting thing about PRI. I mean, just having an idea, seeing people come up and talk about it and what we learned from that. I mean, it was all exciting, you know. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was super exciting. Cool.
Especially to get the recognition and stuff you guys got. So,
well, you too though, Rich. I mean, you got it walking around, and you got the awards, and that was super cool. I wish I'd been able to get out of the booth to come see that. So,
yeah, it is definitely a hectic 3 days, and there's a lot to see.
Definitely.
Speaking of a lot to see, so why don't we give people a bit of a heads up of what our plans are for the year and where they maybe might run into us?
Yeah, definitely. So definitely for sure the second race week, because I know you'll be there, Rich, and I'm planning to go. I'm still on the fence about the first one, mostly because, honestly, because Rich won't be able to make it because of the turnaround for his work. I may be only doing two events this year. So if I don't do the first race week, definitely the second one, but I don't know what my second event would be. Definitely number two race week, but we'll see. We'll see where things end up. And shouldn't run into any kinks on the block machining. A very, very capable shop doing it. And, you know, lifters was really the one thing we're waiting on, because the cracked block didn't result in catastrophic failure. I'm able to reuse everything except for the camshaft. So I'm getting a new cam is on the way.
You might need a couple of push rods.
Probably need all the push rods. Again, those are not, And I have to see where we're at with these lifters. I don't know if the height is different, but I am switching to a 904 lifter. It's a 903. I guess the hole is 904, but it's a bigger lifter. But they might be taller. I might need different push rods anyway. And I got to get different springs. But none of that's the end of the world. Just got to get the time to put it all together.
Well, first quick story. You know, we talk about when your engine failed there. But even that still turned into a cool story. The farmhouse guy you went and talked to, and then we ended up cuddling with Tony and Tess under a tarp in a rainstorm while we were troubleshooting your engine. And
yes.
we still had all kinds of laughs and stuff in there. I mean, I didn't laugh when I left you at the side of the road, but
well, it was more like a cackle when you left. It was more like a cackle.
So my plans for this year are sick week, I think, if I my engine's all apart right now, so I'm supposed to leave in just about a month. Oh my god. Anyways, that'll be the first event. If the car and I survive that event, then I'm gonna try to make it to the small tire gangster race and go check one of those tracks off my bucket list. And then I got a plant turnaround for 42 days from the beginning of June. So as long as the turnaround goes okay, hopefully I'll do Miles of Mayhem and then Rocky Mountain Race Week 2.0. I was pretty lucky to get fourth overall in the Dragon Drive points. Considering I think there was like 2,600 people competed in it. I think I was the only stick car in the top 10, so that was awesome. Pretty cool. So I was representing. But I'm sure it is going to be substantially more competitive. I probably won't make top 10 next year, but
just remember, they got to finish. Yeah, they got to finish.
Yeah, I mean, sick week. Between Taylor Hedrick, Chad Figley, Jeremy Howell, I think Chris Hine is going too. I mean, the chances of me coming home with another orange helmet are slim to none. I thought they were slim last year, but I'm pretty sure there won't be another one coming back. But
it will be exciting to watch for sure.
Yeah, my only goal
most, is most to go definitely.
Yeah, my only goal is to go faster than Bill, anyways. So as long as I do that, then and I make it back home, that's
how fast is that you have to go?
8:69.
Okay, perfect. That's fast enough to stop and turn around, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Number, but I plan it like an 8:49 would be good, and not be able to land it. That would be even better.
Yeah, I think I'll be like 8:47. I won't be able to hand it in, but.
so that's where you'll find me. That's where you'll find me this year, hopefully. Anyways, like, as long as I get the car comes together good.
And Travis May at the new Flying H track, right?
That's the goal. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we will see. I haven't had my schedule planned out, but the exciting things for me this year that I think are relevant are. So I've done the calendar of stick shift races, across the country, but I also include Canada, you know, our snowy friends. I've been working for a few months. I built a tool that will have a map of the United States and Canada, and then it will have pins on it of all of the stick shift races in the United States for the whole year. Which is a huge upgrade over the last one, because the last one was just a list of events and I always wanted it to be something more than that. So this one, you'll be able to click on the pins and the tracks near your area and see if there's anything coming up or anything worth traveling for or whatever. So that will be launching this year that I'm really excited about. And I think that you guys will really appreciate. And I don't know if I'm going to do it this year. But maybe the year after that, I also want to filter it by like race type, you know, so you can filter like radio prep, or you can filter no prep, or heads up, or bracket, or nostalgia, or those types of filters, so that you can kind of specifically see what you're interested in. So that's the goal. That's kind of what I got burning in the fire. So if you are interested in supporting the development costs of that, grab a sticker or a hat or a shirt at Stickshift Nation. I would really appreciate that. And then we can make this even cooler. Maybe we can make those features come out this year. We will see.
That would be awesome. You know what we forgot?
What?
We forgot the new addition to your garage that's going to help you even more with that race car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Bill got some new lifts.
Tell him the story. Tell him the story, because it was super funny.
Okay. So you moved into your new garage and you had a pair of Max Jacks, right? The MX6s or something like that.
So that's a jack. If you have a low ceiling, an 8-foot ceiling, you can still have a lift and you're not going to crush your car on the ceiling.
Yep. And mine are only 9-foot ceilings. So I pondered a lot changing the roof of my garage to get a full size lift in there, but I just didn't think that it was feasible nor worth it for me. Especially because Bill was moving to his new lifts and had his old one for sale. I was like, sweet, I will buy that.
Yes. Yes.
And I was like thinking in my head, okay, we need to plan a trip to Bill's house in Colorado, pick this lift up. And while I'm there, we can also do a little bit of work on the Big Shift Billy. We could also even get together and do a podcast live. And we had all these great grand ideas. And I was like, okay, well, I also have like a 2-month-old baby. So this is getting to be a little logistical nightmare. And then so Bill had to come pick me up for PRI, and he's like, you know what, I have an idea, my Volkswagen has a hitch, I'll just rent the U-Haul trailer and bring your lift to you. So here comes this Volkswagen wagon driving up and hand delivered my new lift to me, which I'm very excited about.
Yes, yes, it was awesome. Did you get it set up yet?
Not yet. So, I have a buddy who pours piers for a living, like concrete piers, but for huge stadiums. And so he's pretty good at concrete, I would say. And he came over and kind of wanted to look at my concrete to see if we wanted to bolt it down right away or if there needed to be any changes. Well, being the guy that he is, he's like, okay, I think we should pour piers that are 6 feet long, 4 feet across, like a foot deep. Oh, and gosh. I'm like, why don't we just tear the whole garage down? We'll just start over, John. I do definitely want to pour some piers. Because I mean, when I was a single guy, I would have just bolted it to the floor and just went on with life. You know what I mean?
Did you determine the concrete's not thick enough yet?
Not yet. But I wanted to drill down and measure. But my buddy John was like, no matter what it is, it's not adequate. So that's where I'm at now. I also have another car in there now, which has turned into a 2-year clutch job. My dad's 4th-gen Camaro. It's just, you know, a street car. But I pulled the clutch out of it like a long time ago. But then every time it just gets worse and worse. We just keep pulling stuff off the car. So it's got a new quick performance rear end sitting on the ground, and we threw the old rear end away, and it's just kind of turned into this balloon of a project that we need to get bolted back up and get it together, because it is definitely in the way of pouring new piers in the garage. So it's kind of like, chicken of the egg situation here. What do we do? So
yes. Yeah. Yes. Awesome. That's awesome.
One of my favorite things about the delivery, real quick, is after we dropped the U-Haul trailer off, Bill was just flying all around town in his Volkswagen diesel. Burm, burm, burm. He's like, my car runs so good at this altitude.
Yeah, it does. It does run better down there for sure. which clearly tells me the turbo is not big enough because it doesn't move enough air at this altitude.
Yep, exactly. I mean, I commend you for being a car guy and leaving that car stock for 200,000 miles. Oh, what does it have on it?
It's not stock.
Oh, okay. What have you modified?
Well, it has a tune.
Okay.
So it makes 350 foot-pounds of torque.
Okay.
And maybe 200 horsepower. Different wheels and tires, you know, to 18-inch because it handles, drives better. And then tinted windows, and the headlights are horrible. So I retrofit some HID type lights in it.
Oh, shoot.
But other than that, it's stock.
Yeah, right? That's standard. I mean, that's the first day whenever you get the car, you tune it and put some tin on and wheels. I mean, that's typical. But I mean, not putting a bigger turbo or crazy things on it.
No, and I have looked at it, but it's expensive and it's still reliable. I have literally almost 200,000 miles on it. It gets 40 plus miles of the gallon. It's the first German car I've ever owned, and it's really nice. Like, I like it. You drove it. You drove it, Travis.
Yeah, drove it a ton. Yeah, it was fun to drive. And what
I think I was sleeping most of the time.
Yeah. No, it was fun. I mean, I think that wagons should make a comeback, because people underestimate how good of a car a wagon is. I mean, the more storage that you can get out of a modern pickup, better fuel mileage.
You know what I'm going to say, aren't you?
What?
They're huge in Europe.
Oh, my God. Yes.
They are, though.
That's true.
In Europe, they're everywhere. They're everywhere in Europe.
So, Rich, did you catch on to that at PRI? I kept teasing Bill because now that he's a traveled man and has gone to all these vacations in Europe or whatever, it seemed like everything that we brought up, he was like, you know, in Europe, they do it this way. you know, in Europe, they do this.
Did you hear what he just admitted
to?
I said I wasn't in the booth long enough to hear any of that.
Yeah, but last, what was it, 62 minutes he was in the booth? He didn't catch it then.
That's a couple of hours. It's over 60 minutes. Like,
I see how that works. Oh, man. Oh, I think we need to cut this thing off.
Yeah. Yeah, our last two listeners of this episode, they were gone a long time ago.
yeah, for sure. As soon as we started talking about Volkswagens, they were like, that's enough. Click.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Rich, you did the intro. You want to do the outro?
Sure. I'll give her a shot here. So, huge shout out to Stickship Nation for hosting this podcast. You can now find it on the Clutch Burners podcast on 10. I'm holding up 10 fingers. I still got them all.
10.
If you ever see my dad, have a look, see how many he's got. Never mind. If you'd like to see Clutch Burners podcast continue and grow, head over to stickracing.com and grab a Stick Shift Nation shirt or a hat or a sticker. And if you watch some of my YouTube videos or where I'm on YouTube, you'll see that there's a big sticker on the back of my car, which I need a new one because I think it's missing a piece. But anyways.
What is your YouTube channel, Rich?
Black Bird GTO, I think it's called. I don't know. I hardly ever post there, but I need to get better at that. So I'm going to do some of that. Also, Clutch Burners shirts are live. If you want to grab a badass Clutch Burner shirt, head over to stickracing.com as well. And then I'm Guido Rich on Instagram, Rich Guido on Facebook. And if you're, it'd be too late by then. I was going to say go vote for me because what's that? What's the other channel? Elite?
Stick Shift Elite, yeah.
Stick Shift Elite. We're having a popularity contest on there right now. And I made it past second and maybe third round, but I don't know. I'm like four votes ahead right now, so we'll see where it ends up. But
I got wiped out in the first round by a lot.
Oh yeah. So we need to get Miles on the podcast and have him explain what it takes to, I mean, because his first round was dominating. I mean, he made a great pass. So we've got to talk with him.
Definitely. So, all right. Awesome. We're out.
Later, guys.
Bye.